Hello, welcome to the Alaska Radio Reader Rambler, your monthly potpourri of literary snacks for the mind and interviews. I'm Sandy Harper here with my co-host Dick Reichman with a very special guest today, the Executive Director of Alaska State Council for the Arts, Charlotte Fox. Welcome, Charlotte.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, maybe we can start off with kind of explain to folks just what is the Alaska State Council for the Arts and what do you guys do?
Yeah, it's very interesting how many people don't understand who we are, what we do. State arts agencies were created in the mid-60s, shortly after the National Endowment for the Arts was created. And it was to give the public an opportunity to support arts and culture. And all of the state arts agencies, there are 54 of us. Some of the American territories have state arts agencies. They are supported by the National Endowment for the Arts and the states. It's supposed to be at least an equal match. It not always is. In the state of Alaska, we have 11-member council that is appointed by the governor, and those people serve at the pleasure of the governor. And then we have our paid staff that does all the work that implements the policies that the council votes on. What we're best known for, of course, is our grants. And we give, this year, we're going to grant about $700,000 in grants, which is an amount that has been steadily growing significantly, over the years. Yeah, it is. It is. But we have a lot of other programs that people may not know about. We have the Silver Hand Native Art Authenticity Program, which is a permit program that we authenticate Native work and art and crafts. We have the State Writer Laureate Program, which is one of my personal favorite programs. Our current State Writer Laureate is Nancy Lord. And we are the only state in the nation that has a writer laureate and not a poet laureate.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yes. Well, I know you even had a playwright laureate because Anne Hanley has had that title.
Yes. Yeah. So. And I think it's really wonderful. Nancy Lord went back to a gathering. They get together about every 2 years, all the poet laureates and then our writer.
She said
it was very interesting that she was the only writer laureate. I think it's wonderful because that enables us to have people like Anne Hanley, a playwright, really bring a different perspective to the state writer laureate position.
I mean, I respect and love poets, but why do you think that is?
I think it's just something that started, and it probably started with the NEA at some point, and I don't know, maybe the way we do things, you know, we do things differently up here. maybe the way we do things is going to catch on in the lower 48. But that's one of my favorite programs. And, of course, we have our public art program, our Percent for Art program, our statewide program, which is directly related to the capital budget, of course, when there's capital funds, state funds for capital projects. We get to commission artists to do work. Right now, the biggest project that's going on is the new AB concourse out at the Anchorage Airport. And I'm very pleased to say that two out of the four projects are being commissioned by Alaskan artists, which is a big deal because many of those projects, they are really large commissions, and many of those projects are completed by outside artists.
I do think that's important as well, and I also think it's an important statement that when somebody arrives in Anchorage, that the arts are appreciated and important.
Yeah. And the Anchorage Airport, they've become a great partner of ours. In fact, we have a contract with them to maintain and curate all of the art out there, which is a really nice collaboration. And is an indication of how they value the art. Certainly the Native art collection out there is really remarkable. And so we take care of all of that art for them, which is nice. The other programs we have, our Native Arts program. We provide Native art training for artists, business training, business leadership training. We just received a $30,000 grant from the National Endowment for the Arts to do a cultural leaders identification survey. And we're going to contract with someone, and we're going to target the Athabascan culture to identify those living cultural treasures in that region.
How fascinating.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating project.
Will you be working in concert with the Native Heritage Center, or how would that work?
Not really. You know, it's interesting, and this is something I've puzzled over. We are the only state agency that is charged with cultural heritage, which I think is a very interesting... I don't know what that says, but I think that's interesting that that there isn't an office of cultural heritage that is really just dedicated to ensuring that all the different cultures in the state are respected and honored and researched.
And we have such a diversity in the state.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing.
Do other states have an office like that?
Many states do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, even some cities have cultural departments.
Right.
Which we don't. Well, we have the Muni Art Council, but that's not quite the same.
Yeah. I mean, in an ideal world, we would have a state division of arts and culture. I think that would be lovely. And our libraries and our museums and our cultural heritage programs would all live there, because I think that it's so much broader than just the arts. And it really tells a lot about who we are and what we value.
Well, let's explore that just a little bit further, because, you know, being in the arts, sometimes we have to justify why the arts are meaningful and are important and should be a part of everyone's life, and why it's important for our emotional, psychological, and every other part of our health. And maybe you could tell us a little bit of your thoughts on that.
Oh, it is interesting when we talk about the value of the arts. It's a very personal experience. As I've said before, I don't go to the symphony or to a play because it's good for the economy. Nobody really does. And yet, we seem to think that in order to justify that, we have to have all these statistics. We have to talk about how many people go out to dinner when they go to a play, and how many people come to town and spend money. And certainly that's important. And in this economy, it's getting more and more important that we promote cultural tourism. But I think it's also difficult. The current term now is creative economy. And so you're not just talking about the arts. You're talking about all those people that work in this creative economy. And that's huge. It can encompass architects.
It's in sparking innovation and creative thinking in general.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It goes way beyond the arts. And I think that one reason they like to look at that is because those kind of thinkers, creative thinkers, whether they be architects or engineers or, you know, all sorts of people, those people, when brought together in a community, make a community more vibrant because they're more interested in the arts and culture and being stimulated and going to galleries and going to plays. You look at cities like Seattle and Portland and kind of the whole amazing creative vitality that are in those cities. And a large part is because people live there who are creative and they want creativity around them.
Right. And this human capital, so to speak, is endless and infinite, as other resources they are not.
Right. You're right. Yeah. You're right. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is a really renewable resource. I love to say that.
well, you know, we are just beginning to explore the richness and potential of the human mind and our capabilities. And I do think the arts do spark that, and which brings us to another place of arts education mm-hmm. and how we need to cultivate and maintain that.
Yes.
The Arts Council is involved in that as well, right?
That's probably our most well-known program is our arts education program. And it's primarily because of our artisan schools program that we have, the residencies. We are currently changing that program a bit. We did an interesting survey. We've been doing our artist residencies programs for 25 years. And all over the state, I mean, the Pribilofs and Unalakleet, Fort Yukon. And the standard program is an artist goes out there for 2 weeks, and then the artist leaves. We did a survey last spring of superintendents of schools districts around the state and found that 73% of the districts surveyed had no arts curriculum.
73%?
73%. Wow. So what that made the council do from a policy perspective is say, wait a minute, we have been providing these residencies to these communities all these years, and what has the impact been? What kind of leave-behind curriculum has been established because of these residencies? Well, not much. So we're beginning to work more closely with the Department of Education, and we are a division of the Department of Education, mm-hmm. work more closely with them to change our residency program just a little and do some new model programs this year in selected districts where we will do longer residencies. We will help the teachers develop some curriculum with the goal of establishing an actual arts curriculum in those school districts.
So it's kind of a fishing pole at MO instead yeah. of delivering fish every now and then.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be interesting to see. It's a model that we've created and we're testing, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with it.
That's very exciting.
Yeah. And one other thing we're doing is we've always had an artist roster. And basically, you know, any artist could be on it. And we have a lot of artists from outside Alaska that are on this teaching or on this roster. We are going to start certifying these artists and actually give them some classroom tools, some teaching tools, some curriculum tools. So while they're still practicing their art while they're out there, they also have some new skills mm-hmm. that they can leave behind. We're also targeting Alaskan artists. We have thought for a long time that this should be a jobs program for Alaskan artists and not necessarily artists from New York and California. So we're also only certifying our Alaskan artists for this program.
That makes so much sense. I mean, we all know it's so difficult if you choose to be an artist to make a living. You know, this phrase, starving artist, yeah. has a lot yeah. of validity. And yeah. so it's something that would really be valuable.
Yeah, it would. It would.
Well, if you want to leave behind an arts program in a school that doesn't have one, that's a much larger effort than just sending in an artist to inspire a few students in that particular term. Mm-hmm. That's a whole nother goal. So we're reaching into the education department. And
yes, we are. And we have started about 5 years ago, we, along with this Arts Education Consortium, started providing summer institutes for classroom teachers
uh-huh.
to teach them the arts. And it's been an amazing program. And so we have this, you know, it's that little, you know, drop a stone in a puddle and it grows.
No,
I
think
grows
that's absolutely where the revolution must occur.
Yes.
So that arts are integrated into our life thinking.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So...
I mean, we've, you know, it's been proven that if we don't have enough students studying music, pretty soon we're not going to have a symphony. If we don't have enough students learning drama, pretty soon you're not going to have any theater artists.
Yeah, it's not just the artists themselves, but the audiences that are developed
exactly.
because an appreciation or a love of mm-hmm. a particular art.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, going back to what you said, why people... Sometime in your life, there is an aha moment or an aha story about why they did have impact. And can you remember what yours was?
Oh, boy. Well, I was raised in an arts family. My brother was a visual artist. I played the piano and danced.
Ah.
And we lived in a small town in southern Oregon,
uh-huh.
if I can just share this personal story. And my mother used to drive us to Portland, 4 hours north, to watch a ballet, because for her, it was so important that we had those experiences. So I had a really, really rich upbringing. And, you know, we saw Nureyev and Fontaine dance.
Whoa.
I mean, it was pretty amazing for growing up in a very small town in Oregon. So I came to this work quite naturally, although I've learned an amazing amount during my 8 years in this job about...
You're celebrating your 8th year?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That's wonderful.
It is.
So obviously, you've been having a good time. It went fast.
Yeah, it has its ups and downs. But, you know, Alaska, last month in June, I was in Sitka. And it was Sitka, first of all. Which is wonderful. They voted to tax themselves an additional, I think, 1% to build a performing arts center in Sitka. That's the kind of community Sitka is and the kind of commitment they have to arts and culture. But this one weekend in Sitka, it was the final weekend of the Sitka Summer Music Festival with Paul Rosenthal.
Mm-hmm.
It was the weekend of the Island Institute, which is this amazing group of thinkers who pose a giant question of life every year and then get together and talk and read about it.
Yeah, I went 1 year. It's very stimulating.
Oh, it's amazing. And it was the final weekend of the Sitka Fine Arts Camp.
Oh, yes.
And so I went to these performances by these junior high kids and went to their visual arts exhibit. And then I had dinner with Terry Rothgar, who's a Tlingit basket maker, who was just chosen one of 11 National Cultural Heritage Fellows by the National Endowment for the Arts. So in one weekend in Sitka, plus, of course, I had to go to the Sheldon Jackson Museum and the Totem Park. I mean, and that's just typical when I go to visit these communities. It's just remarkable what goes on around the state in arts and culture all the time. It's just amazing to
and
me.
And it's so nice that knowing that you help make these things possible.
It is. That is, yeah, that is nice. That's kind of the reward, is being able to help these things happen.
And maybe we could talk a little bit about the grant programs, how people can apply, what the potential possibilities are, and so on.
Sure. We have operating support grants for our larger institutions, and then we have very small grants. We have workshop grants for nonprofits who want to do just one-time workshops. If they have an interesting opportunity to bring somebody in to teach a workshop on writing or theater, whatever it is, mm-hmm. we have those. We have career opportunity grants for artists and arts administrators to travel. They're basically travel grants, or to help prepare for a show. A lot of times we can provide funds to do that. We have the Master Artisan Apprentice Grant, which is currently only for traditional Native artists to work with a master to learn a craft. And those are all on our website. Right now, we just Friday had the deadline for economic recovery grants from the federal stimulus package. The National Endowment for the Arts got funds through that program, and we are going to be awarding $250,000 in grants to arts organizations, arts and culture organizations, for jobs or artists' contracts that they had to cut because of the economic downturn. So it
was for maintaining people who already work in the arts rather than creating new jobs.
Correct.
Anything like that.
Excellent point. Yes, yeah. It is. It is for positions or contracts that either haven't been able to be filled or the jobs are threatened or actually lost within the last 6 months. And I will tell you, I spent the weekend reading those grant applications, and it's scary. I thought that perhaps we were a little bit behind the rest of the United States as far as economic downturn. It's really scary, some of the situations that these arts organizations are in.
You're talking about arts organizations that are suddenly unable to raise the money they're habitually have been raising.
Yes. Because of the recession.
Through earned revenues or their decline, certainly in foundation giving, but also in personal giving. And, you know, we're going to try to help as many as we can, but we don't have many funds. And this next year is going to be hard. It's going to be hard in the arts. It's going to be hard throughout the economy. But many times artists and arts organizations are really hit because that is so often discretionary income. Shall I go to a play? Shall I go to a symphony? I can't give money, you know, those kind of personal decisions that people are making this next year about where to spend and where to give are really going to impact our arts organizations.
Well, they say attendance might even be up, but as you say, maybe the contributions and donations might well be down.
Yeah. This summer I've talked to a lot of people involved in tourism, a lot of our galleries and museums, and it's interesting because people are still traveling. We still have a certain, you know, tourism is certainly down, but people are still traveling, but they're not spending. They're coming into the galleries, and while attendance is down, purchases of art is way down. So it's an indication to me that people committed a long time ago to this cruise or this vacation in Alaska, bought their tickets, but they're here now and they're not spending the kind of money that they traditionally do. So I think it's, I'm not an economist, but from where I'm sitting, it may get worse before it gets better. That's really what I see.
I understand, but see, what that says to me is it's even more important to create art in that kind of climate.
Exactly. Exactly. That's when we all need it the most. It takes me back to after 9/11 and just how many of us had to go experience the arts in one way or another because it feeds our soul. Mm-hmm. And from now more than ever, we need it.
Well, during the Depression of the 30s, there were tremendous federal programs supporting individual artists. And I only know that because I know reading the bios of people who became famous later that they began with these various artistic programs. Is there anything like that happening in our country today?
They're trying. President Obama, before he was elected, talk to artists and arts organizations about creating similar to the Works Programs Administration or something.
Orson Welles Company was very much involved in that, I recall.
Yeah, and a lot of the photographers and
painters were involved.
Right. So it was quite a richness of art at that time.
Yeah, and it really employed artists. Mm-hmm. They are trying to do this? You know, we have a new director of the National Endowment for the Arts.
Yes, from the theater world.
I'm surprised his name hasn't come up in this conversation. Rocco Landisman.
Yes. Yeah. That's going to be fascinating.
Yes, it will. You know, it'll be interesting to see what direction he chooses to
take. Because he's from the commercial theater world as well, which is a whole different mindset.
It is. You know, Dana Gioia, our former chairman of the National Endowment for the Arts, he was a poet, but he was also a marketing guy. And he's the one that came up with A Great Nation Deserves Great Art.
Right, and the Big Read.
He came up with The Big Read. He came up with Poetry Out Loud.
Did you ever read the commencement speech he gave at Stanford a few years ago?
Yeah.
It was extraordinary. In fact, I printed it and put it up on the wall.
He was a great proponent of arts education and arts. And
what it does to our basic values.
Yes. And it'll be interesting. What I've learned over the last 8-9 years is that the director of the National Endowment for the Arts really has a lot to do with the direction that certainly the nonprofit arts go. We had a number of wonderful programs under Dana Gioia that, although it made more work for us, were really good programs.
Right, and you even brought him here in person.
Yes, we did. Yes, he came to visit.
That was a wonderful and inspiring thing to do.
Yeah, it was.
So that's part of what you guys do as well. You create conferences and events.
What changes do you see coming with the new leadership? What would it mean for small arts organizations here in town?
I don't know. I don't think usually the National Endowment programs impact the state arts agencies, and then we in turn can begin new programs and initiatives. And more and more state arts agencies are moving towards programs and initiatives and not so much away from grants, but starting to do more of their own programs instead.
That is fascinating. You know, I recently attended a conference, and the overture to the conference was in D.C., and it was Theater Group Communications. That's the network of all the nonprofit theaters.
Right.
And they arranged for us to go visit our senators and, you know, I guess lobby is the correct word.
Educate.
For arts educate, that's better. And I would like to comment that Lisa McCoskey, who we visited, and she was just very gracious. She was the only one who actually came out and visited the delegation. And her office is all art, Alaskan art.
Yes,
and
it is.
And it's rather unique in that way. I mean, Iowa had a popcorn machine. But
is that where...
That's a major Iowan thing, I guess. But our senator's office is full of Alaskan and especially Alaskan Native art, and it was very wonderful.
Yeah. And speaking of that, that's one of our programs, is our art loan program. And we have contemporary art by Alaskan artists that we loan to state offices and to the congressional delegation. So, and both Senator Murkowski and Senator Begich have a lot of art on loan that we loan them
wonderful.
To hang on in their offices. It's really a wonderful program.
It is. And you guys actually have an art bank, too, don't you?
Yes, that's it.
Is that still
going? That's where we get the art. And we're hoping within the next year to have another purchase of art. So we'll have a general call for artists to submit their work. And we'll buy more art for our art bank. It's kind of an odd term. It's more of an art library.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, Charlotte, we thank you so much for visiting us today and giving us a little insight. I know there's one more thing you might want to mention about the Governor's Arts Award.
Oh, thank you. Yes. The Governor's Awards for the Arts and Humanities are going to be held October 22nd at the Captain Cook Hotel. We already have our reservation form up on our website, so we encourage people to come. It's a great opportunity to celebrate.
Can they still nominate people, too?
No,
that's
finished.
But. Well, then join Charlotte Fox and the Asco State Council for the Arts and the Asco Humanities Forum, I think, co-host. In October, as you say, celebrate the arts in Alaska. We're so fortunate to have so many wonderful arts and art programs. Thank you, Charlotte, and join us again next week next month. I'm sorry, next month, when the Alaska Radio Reader Rambler will do a special program for the world premieres at Cyrano's, celebrating Alaska this year.